So that if I win, it's not because I'm trying to not lose to their
their
best attributes. It's to win with my best attributes. Welcome to the Fuel
Hunt Show. What's going on, Eagles? Welcome to the Fuel Hunt Show. I'm Joey. I'm here with Drew. And today we are joined by a very special guest, one of the few, but also a law enforcement officer, second degree black belt, multi-time medalist nationally, right? Jiu-jitsu competitor.
Yeah, Pan Am national medalist.
Yep. A reader.
Oh, absolutely. Avid reader.
Avid reader, a stoic philosopher.
One of our very first models.
One of our very first faces of the few.
Swiss Army knife, you know.
So I say all those things, but I'm glad you said that because I regard you as one of the hardest working Eagles in our community, but there's something special about you. I see you working that hard in silence. Like, I don't see you flossing and flexing on the gram. You know, you post your competition photos and things like that, which are amazing. But, like, I don't know if people really understand how much you do in a given week and how hard you work. But we'll get into that a little bit, right? We'll certainly get into that. So I'm pumped that you're here today. It's been a long time coming.
Yeah.
Long time coming. The few definitely know you from the gram, right? Mm-hmm. And they know of your competitions and things like that. They typically want to know about your come up.
Mm-hmm.
So let's talk about what it was like coming up, growing up, how you found your way into jiu-jitsu, law enforcement. Mm-hmm. Like, let's start there. Absolutely. And then we'll go into some other stuff first.
Absolutely. And dude, it's an honor to be here, man. Like you said, it's a long time coming. We always like... Every time I visit, we wind up talking. It feels like a podcast. Yeah, our conversations, but to actually sit down, man, I really appreciate you guys having me on here. But yeah, I mean, I don't look at my childhood come up as being like anything that out of the ordinary. Like, I didn't have any super, you know, traumatic experience that like conditioned me for, you know, the chaos, so to speak. But, but at the same time, like, I wasn't like, I feel like some people look at me now with my, how long I've been in jiu-jitsu and my like physicality and stuff like that, and think that like I'm a great athlete, and I'm not, man. Like, I was not athletic at all. Like, I was that skinny, unathletic kid, you know. Uh-huh. And even now, like, being like, I'm like athletic for jiu-jitsu, but if you toss like a ball to me, I'd fucking bobble that shit left and right. Like, but I've built myself up for jiu-jitsu, what I need as far as like the physical tools and requirements for that sport. But
yeah,
when I got into it, it was like, I got into it because it was the only thing I was really like that I took to, you know. I mean, I played other sports, but I was not an athlete. It was not like, there was not a sport that I gravitated toward that I was good at. And
but primarily like physical growing up, playing sports.
Yeah, exactly. Like any other kid trying them out and everything like that. And I actually got into Taekwondo first because I had some friends who were kind of like me, where like they weren't like, you know, phenomenal athletes and stuff. And it was kind of like, I was like, let me try this shit out. Like, let me try martial arts out.
So you never excelled at any sports, you would say, school, college?
No. Like, okay. Not until martial arts.
You're really jacked now.
Yeah,
you're peeling. And
it's all for show.
I remember we were talking the one time, and I feel like maybe send me a picture from like college or something. I was like, because I was like always this kind of build, and he's equally as jacked in his younger years as he is now.
Well, I think like it's interesting you say that. I feel like I had a propensity for building muscle. Like my dad was in pretty good shape, like without being like an athlete himself, like just from like manual labor and stuff. Like, he always had a good physique and everything like that. I was naturally like lean, but I was skinny. Like, I didn't have like, you know, some kids are just like, they look built even if they're not doing a ton of stuff. Once I started training like Taekwondo, I started lifting then too. I was like, because I was like, let me get a base for this.
What age was that?
I was probably 15 maybe, something like that. Yeah. So like right around that age where I was going to be, where like lifting would be, a benefit to me. I wasn't like too young. I didn't like start super late.
Sure.
And I started to put on some muscle, and I was already lean. So like, you know, it's not like I had to lose weight. Like, all I could focus on was like lifting and building muscles. So I got real into lifting, got into Taekwondo. And that's where I started to look like an athlete. And then around that time, like, I trained Taekwondo for a couple years, but my cousin exposed me to jiu-jitsu because he was training at the time. He was like 10 years older than me. And he was a better athlete, but he was coming out of college, like finishing like track and field and stuff. And then he got into jiu-jitsu, and it was like So for him, that was like an athletic outlet to start the next chapter of like his athletic career. Sure. And then he was like, yo, you like, I know you're trained Taekwondo and stuff and you enjoy it. He's like, you got to do this shit. Yeah, so like, it's great.
Did you enjoy Taekwondo?
Yeah. For me, because for me, it was like, again, something that I took to a little bit, I could delve into, feel like I was actually like, you know, part like hitting my stride there, was like part of, you know, of my identity and stuff. So yeah, I enjoyed it. It gave me like a good base and foundation, good confidence, obviously, like all the things you'd want martial arts to do for you. But then, yeah, I started training jiu-jitsu and it was obviously like a lot more physical and stuff, but I still felt like I was gravitating toward it. And I was one of the, like at the time, like when I started probably like 16 years old or whatever, like that was young. Now you get kids that are starting like six, you know, like they're born into it. At the time, like 16, like I was always the youngest one in the room. It was like a bunch of adults. You know, so I got to train with people stronger than me. And I, you know, so I was always lifting, trying to hold my own, trying to be, you know, match that strength and that physicality.
Do you remember how you felt then? Like being like the youngest kid in the room?
I guess maybe
the Taekwondo helped.
It definitely helped where I didn't feel like I was totally out of my element. Mm-hmm. And I think to an extent it felt like, because I was holding my own, I wasn't like totally, you know, caught off guard by it or like overwhelmed by it. It felt cool to be like the youngest one, because you felt like, man, I'm kind of like,
yeah, you're that,
yeah,
that up and comer, right?
Exactly, like the, you know,
the underdog,
right? Like you know, but you felt like you're holding your own, you belong here and stuff. So it was cool, like, and it wasn't like I was, you know, demolishing people, but I was kind of like, man, it's cool to be young, to be like, this kind of outlier as far as compared to all these other guys that are a little bit older, more experienced, stronger, but to still be like accepted by them, still be appreciated.
We just did a show on, you know, our jiu-jitsu journey over the past like 2+ years or whatever, how we feel about it, what we've learned. And we went through Maslow's hierarchy of needs, which I'm sure you're familiar with, right? Mm-hmm. And we went through every layer of the pyramid and said like jiu-jitsu checks this pyramid or checks this box on the pyramid, this one. And just as Dylan was talking, like, you said belonging, you said esteem, you said confidence, you know what I mean? Like all of those things that it just checks the box on, especially at a time, you said you were younger, but like at that time, 16 years old or whatever, like you're finding yourself in the world. Absolutely. Like you're looking for that sense of belonging.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So it's good that you found that type of family and that type of productive outlet for it.
And that's a good age too, I feel like, because to your point, like, when you're starting a little bit older in life, like you guys are, like you have a, I guess like a particular expectation for like fitting into stuff, being accepted. Cause you're already you already have a particular standing in, you know, the world and the community and stuff like that as adults. Yeah. But then you kind of jump into something like that. You almost backtrack where you're like, damn, I'm out of place here. I don't feel like, even if people are welcoming and accepting, like you don't feel accepted as far as like your ability and your standing there. But 16, you're kind of like, you're in between. Like, obviously it can still be daunting, but you're not like, you understand that you're still growing. You're still like finding your place. So you can tolerate being like not having that perfect fit right away.
And grow with you don't really develop that ego when you're the youngest guy in the room. You're supposed to lose, right? Yeah. So when you win, it's just cool.
Right, exactly. Yeah.
That's one of the coolest things. And we talked about this on the show, like acceptance of fact, right? Mm-hmm. At the pinnacle of the pyramid, right? And self-actualization. And that's one of the things, like for me starting at 40, like I have achievements, you know what I mean? I thought a certain set of thoughts about myself, and very quickly I had to accept that they were not facts.
Yeah.
You know, jiu-jitsu taught me that there was so much more work that I had to do and growth, and I'm like so grateful for that.
Yeah.
You know, because if I never started practicing, I would still be walking around thinking reality is one thing, and it's absolutely not.
And it's cool to, in any like facet of life, to have that realization set in, you know, like whether it's jiu-jitsu, like somebody like me, like, you know, still being able to go to certain rooms and train with certain people and feel and like realize that I still have so much growth left to do and so much progress left to make. Mm-hmm. Or for you guys, like hitting a certain stride in your endeavors as entrepreneurs and businessmen, feeling like you're doing well, you're hitting your stride, and then, you know, maybe go to a particular convention or talk to a particular individual or business and being like, damn, like we still got a lot of work to do, you know?
Yeah, very powerful stuff.
Holds you accountable.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
So you started around 16. When does competition start for you?
I started competing like right away as a white belt, but I would say I did it like back then. It was more like because I felt like obligated, you know, like my cousin was competing a lot and I was kind of like, I mean, I still wanted to do it. I still did it like of my own volition, but I don't think it was the kind of thing where like, if nobody had given me that like push or talked me into it, that I would have just like done on my own. Like, cause again, I wasn't like a super competitive athlete. So that wasn't like ingrained in my, you know, code, genetic code. So it was just like, it was a gradual process. Like I got talked into it, did it, and like, you know, felt okay. Like it wasn't like I was totally overwhelmed. I didn't like then totally suck. Like, but I wasn't like a natural, like just born competitor.
Sure.
So I did it all through basically every belt level. You know, I took a little bit of a break when I was, you know, going through like the police academy and stuff like that. But I competed like through college and stuff while I was, you know, full-time student and things like that.
Okay.
But I would say it was like black belt where like late brown, early black belt where I kind of like rediscovered myself and felt like now I'm like, I'm a competitor. Like I feel like I love it. There's things that I get from it that I didn't before.
Yeah. I remember having that conversation with you about you kind of like finding yourself again at that level. Yeah.
So you took a break. You said you took a break from competing, not from jiu-jitsu. So the past 15 years, you've been never had any time off.
Yeah. Like basically at the time. So it's funny because now, like I train now more than I did when I was like in my 20s and stuff. Yeah. Because at the time there was like, and you know, I guess I'll segue a bit. Like it's, we were talking about this earlier, like jiu-jitsu, like, you know, when I started, like you couldn't even watch it on fucking YouTube, let alone Instagram, TikTok, like having apps dedicated to it.
Can't get away from jiu-jitsu now.
Yeah, absolutely. So I trained a lot, but like I wasn't doing, like people weren't really, a lot of people weren't doing 2-a-days and stuff like that because everybody had full-time jobs. Like everybody was doing it on the side. So it was like you either trained like at lunch because you couldn't train at night or you trained at night because you couldn't train at lunch.
Sure. It was even that kind of class times too. I feel like most schools at the time probably had like 8 o'clock p.m. jiu-jitsu on Tuesday and Thursday.
Yeah. So I always just trained once a week, but I trained every day basically, you know, because I had no other obligations really. Like I didn't have any other sports. That was my thing. And so other than like school or, you know, after my like early academic career being in college, like things like that, I had no other reason not to go. So I would go, it was like a ritual, you know, I would train. It was great. That was like my, my outlet and my space. And so, I did that all through high school, college. And then even when I was taking a break from competing, because I was doing other things with like the police academy being, having to be there on the weekends, sometimes things like that, I was still training every day, get down to, you know, police academy and go right to practice. So yeah, I never really, other than when I like had an injury that would take, you know, a week, 2 weeks, off. Like I was never, I never took like a sabbatical from it.
You know? Gotcha. What was it like with your peers? Like when you're in high school, when you're in college, when you're in the academy, because jiu-jitsu isn't as popular then, right? So like, did your peers understand like what you were doing, what you were dedicating so much of your life to?
I think it's like some of them that had a little bit of an understanding of the sport, like they look at it like, it's cool. You're like, you know, you're training this like the secret, you know, like people don't really know, they know what it is, but they're not overly familiar with it. So they look at you and like they regard you a little bit higher and stuff. And then other people that don't really know what it is or just don't care, or just like, ah, it's just, he's just doing his martial arts thing. He's doing his karate, you know? It's kind of twofold.
It's interesting too, probably as the UFC gained popularity, because when you started, it probably wasn't popular at all, but your friends are probably like, this is so awesome. And you're like, this is what I've been telling you now.
They think, you know, they're like, oh, you train, you know, that's where that like moniker comes from. Like, you train UFC. It's like, well, no, I train jiu-jitsu, but I've, you know, trained.
How many people do you think you're responsible for getting into jiu-jitsu?
I hope a lot, man. You know, like it's cool. I was just talking to a couple of my college friends the other day. I hadn't seen some of them for a while. And like in college, like, I don't think, I went to a fairly small college and like, you know, 2000 people or something, but I don't think any other person at the time that I was in college trained jiu-jitsu. I think it was the only one. There was obviously like, we had good, real good wrestlers there. And a lot of people went on to train jiu-jitsu. Some of them were maybe dabbling with it here and there when I was there, but nobody trained it the way I do. And now like, I just saw a couple of them the other weekend and like one of them's a purple belt, you know,
Amazing.
Like the other one just started training. And then like a third one, we're trying to get to train. And so it's cool. It's amazing. You know, now I'm seeing like the progress of it. And like, you know, some people, some guys that I went to college with that I know train now, like same thing. They're like, yeah, we, you know, we started getting into it. We knew you did it and stuff. And it was like, we didn't realize like how, you know, prevalent you were in the sport or in the, and everything like that until we started. And it was, it's kind of cool to be like, to feel like, oh, I hope you got into it. Cause you knew I was doing it. You
know? Yeah. Yeah. Amazing. It's awesome. That's why I asked about how it was with your peers. Cause I got to imagine when you're in college, like there's not a whole gang of you doing practicing jujitsu, you know?
Nope. Not back then.
That's the, when you asked me earlier, if, I had any regrets or advice, I was thinking back to when I first started. I was like, if I had the time I had in college, I couldn't imagine how awesome it would be to be obsessed with jiu-jitsu in college because all you have is free time.
Yeah, right.
Like you go to class for a couple hours a day.
You would have dropped out. Yeah, you'd be like, fuck this school shit. Like,
I wish I could just go back and find my love for jiu-jitsu then because I would fucking literally just train all the time.
Yeah.
Like, freak.
Yeah.
So but in college, did you go, you went crazy like training?
Yeah. I mean, like, yes and no. Like, I was, because again, I didn't, at the time, since nobody, there weren't like full-time jiu-jitsu athletes. Like I trained it all the time with the intention of like I knew I would train it for the rest of my life basically, but I never knew, like I never planned on making money off it or anything like that. Cause that just wasn't really a thing. You know, I mean, the people that made money off it were the ones that ran academies, but they usually didn't have the choice. Like they were got like, you know, Brazilian athletes or whatever, who like, you know, they came here to train jiu-jitsu and compete. And really their only method of making money would be to run an academy. Otherwise you'd have guys, everybody that ran an academy also had a full-time job. You know, there wasn't like that the way it is now where you get people that are like 16 that are just like, I'm gonna do jiu-jitsu for the rest of my life. Wasn't like that.
That's crazy. It's like a real sport now.
So I trained every day in college, but it was like, it was just because I enjoy doing it. It was like that was my thing. You know, I'd go to class, I'd work out, take a nap, and I'd go train jiu-jitsu. Like that was just my routine. But you know, now you have guys that like the entirety of their existence is built around training jiu-jitsu and trying to become a full-time jiu-jitsu athlete. So it's definitely shifted dramatically in that regard.
What so you're making your journey through jiu-jitsu and earning your belts, right? You said that you kind of rediscovered yourself at late brown, I guess you said. What was there a specific moment?
Absolutely. It's it's cool that you bring that up, because oddly enough,
not
like,
to gloss over, we're going to rewind and go back to the other belts. You really piqued my interest.
And it's, I think it's cool that it did happen to me like that. Cause like, it was like Drew was saying, and like hindsight's 2020, obviously I wish that if I knew now that I'd still be as active and competing in jiu-jitsu the way that I am, I'd be like, then I would have been doing 2-a-days all the way from high school on, but life doesn't work like that. It is what it is. I'm like, it happened for a reason. You know, I always tell people, maybe if I had trained that much, sure, I could have gotten better at a younger age and stuff. But like, what's that?
Your longevity.
Yeah, maybe I would have gotten burned out. I wouldn't even train anymore, you know, and there's a lot of other things I would have missed out on. So
arguably also like the amount of lives that you directly impact right now, not just through your competition, but one thing that I glossed over in the beginning is your instruction as well. On multiple levels, 100%. not just across the way here at Marquez, but also with EF, right?
Yeah, so, with EF combatives, with 100%. And but with the
belt moment,
with the competing, I always competed through most of the belts and stuff, and I had some, like, I had a lot of local success. I wasn't competing like a ton nationally or internationally, because again, that just wasn't as prevalent for like people. Even though jiu-jitsu's always had a big presence here in like the greater Philadelphia area and the East Coast, it wasn't to the extent that it was in like on the West Coast where like the academies that were that were there that people were training at and competing, like those were probably where you had a lot more of like the Brazilian instructors who were competing nationally, and so their students were also competing nationally from an early age. Like I competed a ton, but it was in like the tri-state area, you know, maybe a little bit in like on the East Coast of Florida or something like that, but I wasn't like traveling across the country the way that I am now, because it just wasn't really that way at the time. So I always compete a lot, and I racked up a lot of experience, but I never like felt like I was in that upper echelon of competing where I was traveling all over the country competing against the best of the best. It was like, I'm just testing myself all the time against people in this tri-state area kind of thing. And so then once I started to hit like brown belt, black belt, that, you know, it just gets tougher and tougher, because now the people that you're competing against for the most part are people who are like pretty damn good. Or if they're still competing, it's because they deserve to still be competing. They're not just like, they're not just testing
they're
it out.
They're not testing themselves.
Now you get people that obviously like maybe the first time they ever compete is at black belt. They test it out. There's specific divisions for them. But yeah, at the time it was like, you know, you go from white to blue to purple. You know, once you hit brown and black, you're like, these dudes are good. And I was starting to hit that point where I was like, you know, this is tough. Like, it's hard. I can't just show up and compete anymore. Like, these guys are legit. And so I was like, I don't know, maybe that's kind of the, I've reached that point in my career of competing where like, I'm gonna have to slow down because I can't just show up with a full-time job and as a student, all this stuff and compete against these guys that are really, really legit.
Sure.
So I kind of took a break. I would compete here and there. And then eventually, I was right around like when that Fight to Win promotion started coming around in Philadelphia area. I applied for that to do a super fight. And that was like the first super fight I think I had done. You know, everything other than that was just like tournaments. So it's different when you're doing like a 1v1 thing. You're up on a stage, a lot more pressure and stuff. Yeah, so I was like, man, am I good enough for this? Yeah. And, but I you know, wound up having some success for that promotion, winning a bunch of matches and getting better and better opponents suggested for me or matched up against.
Sure.
And same thing, it was like I was getting matched up with guys that had like a lot of experience that were really good and competed, you know, as pro fighters for like big organizations at the time or had competed, you know, and won to a very high level at like in just straight jiu-jitsu tournaments across the country.
Yep.
And I was like, dude, I don't know if I'm good enough to go against these guys. And my, you know, my instructor who gave me my black belt, Rob Shire at the time, he was like, he really like, I credit him with giving me a lot of confidence at the time with just being like, dude, like, fuck that. You're good enough. Like,
yep.
What do you, you know, like you're damn good. Like, just get out there, you know, these guys have to worry about, you know, you don't just be fixated on them. And I was like, you know what? You're right. Like, what's worse that could happen? And so I got out there, just kept putting myself out there and, you know, with mixed results, obviously you go against certain guys like that are really good. I've lost my fair share, of matches, but it really helped me get that understanding and that appreciation that like, yeah, I do belong up here. You know, I am good enough.
So important to have somebody like that in your corner
when
you need it.
Yeah.
It sounded like you needed it in that moment. So
yeah. Cause you go through that roller coaster of competing where like I said, in the beginning, I was like, I'm not a boring competitor or anything. And so it was enough just to start competing in the first place was one thing.
Yep.
Then to continue competing over all those years and eventually start competing at the highest level. Like there are times where you need those outside influences, those other people to be like, dude, you know, you can do this. You are good enough.
Yep.
Realistically, it's imposter syndrome at a different level. It's like you were just, am I good enough to be here? And that, my next question was going to be, did it come with a string of losses? Like, did you have to continue battling through losses, even to just come to the actualization that, like, you are good enough, obviously, to be where you are today? But
yeah, I think there's always – I've always had those, you know, fluctuations of success and failure.
Yeah.
And, you know, the success was good enough to remind me that, like, yeah, I am good enough. I do belong here. And it would motivate me to have more success. And then the failures were, like, a good reminder that, like, hey, there's still a lot of progress left to be made.
Yeah, learning experiences,
and, yeah,
too.
So I've had plenty of, you know, failures. But I always feel like I've learned from everyone. I know it sounds cliche.
Yeah.
But, like, I don't think I've ever, like, had a loss or whatever that I didn't immediately become, like, motivated from afterward or take something from, you know.
Winner learn.
Learn
always.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Absolutely. Is there, when you look back at all of you're still competing, you have a competition next weekend, right?
Yeah.
But when you look back at your previous competitions, is there one lesson that always rings true? Like, I know that you've said you've always learned something from them, but is there a common lesson that you could impart on the community from whether it was a win or a loss? Like, you know, just
to piggyback on that question though. I have a similar question is like, would you have changed anything if this helps refine the question? Or would you have changed anything about your journey or done differently?
Yeah. Well, again, like with the hindsight thing, there's probably a ton I would have changed. But yeah, I think like just going in and we talk about this with like everything that we do in life. And I know you guys would echo this sentiment as a message is that like just going into every whether it's a training session or like showing up for work, like just always having like intent and purpose, like and this is why I love like working with Coach John a lot is like we kind of naturally both had this viewpoint, and we try to pass along to a lot of the fighters and stuff, is just like, don't just show up and train because, you know, it's on your schedule mm-hmm. and it's like sweat equity and things like that. And I did that a lot. Like that's probably, to your question, Drew, like the thing that I would change the most, like I felt like during the majority of my earlier jiu-jitsu career and like my, like all the color belt levels, like yeah. I trained a lot. Right. But I was just showing up and training hard. Right. Like mm-hmm. I didn't always have like, I wasn't showing up and training with like intention or purpose or like a goal. It was just like, hey, it's good enough that I'm here, that I'm
yeah.
training my ass off. And there's something to be said for that. Right. But mm-hmm. once you get to a point where you're like, your thought process going into training is like different. You're structuring like particular thoughts and goals around that. It's different than just showing up and working hard, right?
Yeah,
sure.
And so if I could go back and change one thing, it would be to like earlier on to start doing that, to really show up with like goals in mind, particular things I want to work on that I want to try to accomplish or do, instead of just being like, I'm just going to show up and work hard.
Yeah,
right?
Sure.
Like that's
yeah.
easy, right? Sure. Like, you know, once you're like in our position where you enjoy doing that, yep. it's easy, right?
Yep.
But it's hard to like really formulate like a goal and a game plan around that, to really do the mental side of it. So
yes.
that's one thing that if I could have changed earlier on, I would have done. And now that would be my recommendation to people now that are competing a lot and stuff. It's like, We all show up and train, right? That's yep. across the board. Like if you do jiu-jitsu, you do MMA yeah. and you compete, you probably train hard. There's nothing, you know, mm-hmm. there's nothing special about that, right? But it's hard to like really get your mind in a place where before every session or before competitions, like you've done the hard mental work. You've mm-hmm. come up with you've worked on your deficiencies. You've game planned, you've strategized for your strengths, your things like that. Like that's not easy to do. And yep. sometimes your mind's just not in the right place for that. Like I look back and I'm like, man, why didn't I do that earlier on? Why did it take so long? My mind just might not have been in the right place. Mm-hmm. There could have been people along the way that were like trying to be like, hey, maybe you should, instead of just going hard every training session and like trying to just win every match hard, like maybe you should work on this and that. And like sometimes sure. it just doesn't resonate. It takes time.
You got to learn the lessons at the right time for you, I guess.
Yeah, and
your
absolutely.
Level of awareness changes over yes. the years. You
I
know
think
what
that's,
I mean?
I, absolutely.
And all that type of stuff. You make such a great point, and it sounds so crazy to say, but you can, now this is whether it's office, home, or school, jiu-jitsu, yeah. right? You can show up and you can work hard, but without a goal or intention, hard work just becomes the goal
mm-hmm.
and you're actually in a comfort zone.
Yeah. yeah.
As
yeah.
hard as you're working,
yeah.
you're actually in it, right? No,
yeah.
it's true.
Yeah, that's my part. Yeah. That's the truth though.
You're actually in a comfort zone. Really? Especially yeah,
you're
for like when
you're acclimated to it.
Exactly.
There's no yeah. more growth anymore.
When you're a high achiever, you're going to come up, you're going to, yeah. or you're going to go in, you're going to grind it out, but without having that goal in mind, you're actually not growing, which
yeah.
is so, it's so wild to think.
Yeah.
You used a word earlier, ritual. Right. I think everything you just described is kind of the difference between a ritual and a routine. Like you can be in the routine of going there and training super hard and grinding it out, but it really doesn't become a ritual unless you have the intention behind it
yeah.
and the belief in something higher, like a reason why you are there.
Yeah.
And you used the word ritual earlier. You said, oh, it was kind of like a ritual. I was going and like mm-hmm. it kind of dinged, you know
yeah.
what I mean? In my mind, like, yeah, exactly.
Yeah. There's like, go ahead, Drew.
Well, I was going to say, intention is literally a life hack. Like it changes,
yeah. mm-hmm.
it changes everything. But I wanted to touch on the rituals, and you said we were talking about your game plans yeah. going into practice and or competition. So what does a ritual or game plan look like for you going into a big match? Like a
yeah, and that's a good mm-hmm. question. And I don't know that there's like a right answer for it. Like I got asked this question recently too with that, and like everybody's different. Like I have mm-hmm. like our one group chat with some like the competitors, like my one friend, like he'll like, as soon as the brackets come out or like and everything like that, like he's like doing like a deep dive, like research on like all of his opponents and stuff, mm-hmm. you know? And I think it's super smart, right? You want to be familiar with what they do, what they're good at, what to expect, things like that. But I think it's different for everybody. Like for me, to an extent, I don't always like doing that because I feel like personally, then I become fixated on that other person. Mm-hmm. I kind of lose sight of like what I'm doing, what I'm good at.
Yep.
So for me, sometimes, like obviously, if I'm going against somebody who's known for a particular move or whatever, I want to be familiar with it so I don't just waltz right into it.
Yeah.
But then after that, it's kind of like, you know what? I got a job to do when it comes to my own technique and my own confidence and self belief. And like, if I start deviating from that and thinking about somebody else and all these other factors,
yeah,
you yes. know, then maybe I wind up, you know, like I'm not putting that full effort and attention to my own part. To you know, game. My mind split in two ways. So my routine sometimes like that is just like, I try to have as much, you know, even though it's like a job competing sometimes, yeah. Mm-hmm. I try to have as much fun as I can, like just enjoy the process of working hard, bettering myself as much as possible up until the time that it's time to compete so that I can look back and be like, you know what? Like, I didn't really think about competing this week. I just thought about getting better, working hard, sure. improving. And then now that it's time to go out and compete, like I'm going to do the best with what I have mm-hmm. when I can and let the chips fall where they may. And yeah. just like, so kind of splitting it into like two different things, like not really focusing on competition up mm-hmm. until it's time to compete. And then just being like, you know what, here's what I have to work with. I did all this effort to get this final product. And now I'm going to go out there with that final product and just fucking send it.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. So. Shelly just had her, Shelly's a purple belt fellow eagle in the community. She just had her first MMA fight.
Yeah.
Awesome.
She's at a Gracie school, in Texas. And there's a little promo video for a fight. And she said this, now this is her first MMA fight. Right. But I thought it was wise of her. She said the very same thing. She's like, look, like, yes, I glanced like at previous tape from my competitor and like I know what she's bringing to the table. She's like, but if I get too fixated on that, it robs me
yeah.
of what the hard work I've done and what I'm prepared to do to go mm-hmm. out there. Mm-hmm. Like, so you can't. So I think there's a fine line between like fixation and focus.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
That's a really good point. And yeah. I think like, you know, again, there's probably plenty of people that do just the opposite and have success mm-hmm. with it.
Sure.
I think that's where we as competitors and like human beings, like there is no one, mm-hmm. you know, blueprint for it. But yeah. yeah, I think for me, like we were talking about earlier, because I wasn't like a born competitor and was just like always, like gravitated toward it and everything. I always have to work to instill that confidence in myself and my game.
Sure.
And so like, if I go out there thinking about somebody else, like I'm almost competing then like not to lose to that person, to what they're yeah. good at. But I'm yep. not competing to win with what I'm good at. So
exactly.
I want my focus to be like executing the best of my ability. So that mm-hmm. if I win, it's not because I'm trying to not lose to their,
yeah.
their best attributes. It's to win with my best attributes.
It translates right into business too. It's the same type of thing with your competitors in business space. It's the same thing. You fixate on them all day. Yeah. You don't make progress.
Yeah. For
you know,
sure.
you're not you and you're yeah. not bringing and it, to the table.
And it
the
feels
value.
Like it's like, you know, to an extent, like somewhat toxic, right?
Yeah.
Like you're, mm-hmm. you know what I mean? You're deviating from like your own space in your own, you know, thoughts and habits and positivity
yes.
and what makes you, and you're like, you're letting all that outside influence, like to some extent, mm-hmm. Start to negate like
yep.
what you're good at.
The one picture photo that this brings to my mind that I love is Michael Phelps when he's racing. I forget what Olympics it is, but
oh, yeah.
his opponent who's behind him is looking over at him. And Michael Phelps
yeah.
is locked in on the finish line or
whatever.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
absolutely.
And I think he said something about it after the fact. He's like, I'm always focused on where I'm going, not the people.
Yeah, and it's so hard to do that, right? Like,
oh,
we're human. Like yeah. everybody,
human nature, man.
We're always glancing over at like you know everybody else. Everybody else's lawn is the grass green.
Yeah,
kind of thing. And it really takes time to. Like, it's easy to say that you're going to do it that way, but, mm-hmm. like, it really is, like, a full-time job to not let those thoughts creep in and stuff and
oh,
stay on your path, yeah. you know? But that's the fun of it, man. It's not, like,
yep.
it was easy, everybody would do it. You know?
That's the mental, part of the mental challenge.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Definitely. Sure. So we touched on competition a little bit. You gave some great advice. I love the fact that you called it out as relative. Like, it's not... bulletproof, right?
Yeah.
There's no one way to do it, right? It's relative. I love that. You also are an instructor,
mm-hmm.
right? So we'll get into the instruction a little bit. So where I want to cover Marquez and I want to cover EF combatives, right? So if you could talk a little bit about instructing in both of those places, and then we'll get into some more relative advice for people just starting their jiu-jitsu journey.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, it's funny with the instruction too, like just like competition, like I wasn't like I consider myself to be a good instructor now because
yeah.
I put a lot of time and effort into it and I have a lot of confidence in the product that I put out for it
mm-hmm.
and I've you know have reception from people that I teach and their responses and testimonials and I think that can back it up but I was
mm-hmm.
like I was not a born instructor or teacher by any means either I never like when I was coming up as a jiu-jitsu practitioner myself before teaching,
mm-hmm.
you know, I'm still a practitioner now. I still have so much improvement left to do. But, you know, looking mm-hmm. back over the years when I was like really in my journey and growth. Like I'd never taught, like I just wanted to show up, train hard, get my training in. Like I feel like I barely even paid attention as like a student, you know, looking back as an instructor, I'm like, damn, like man, I wasn't even a good student. Yeah. I just, you know, I showed up, I trained hard. I got that equity in from like the hard work, but I had no, aspirations to like teach. I would do things well and people would be, oh, how'd you do that kind of thing? And I'm like, I don't know. I just did this and blah, blah, blah. Like I couldn't replicate that, pass on to somebody else. And I think it wasn't until like kind of that time that I had that epiphany of like needing to reinvent myself as a competitor around the black belt time that I was like, the best way that I could do that is by really becoming much more cerebral in my approach, not just showing up, working hard, putting the effort in, but like, really doing a deep dive into the science behind it, not just treating jiu-jitsu like a sport, like a physicality, but treating it like a mental game, a chess game. Mm-hmm. And, I really became so much more studious, you know, and that's where like, I credit a lot, you know, the guys at Movement Art, because that was what I was missing. Like I always trained hard. I trained as hard as anybody else. Right. But I wasn't like a student of the game the way those guys were. And so that's like the biggest, change I've made in the last few years is like, I mean, I study now, as much as anybody. Like at the time I didn't, I worked as hard as anybody, but I didn't study as hard as anybody. Now I do.
When I went over to Movement Art the other day I took Parker over there. The one kid's class was just finishing up and they all had notebooks.
Yeah.
And I was like, what are they doing? They're doing their studies.
Dude, if I showed you the notes section on my phone,
yeah,
it would blow your mind. There's probably like over 100 individual, you know, note folders with hundreds of screenshots. Like that's where I take my notes. I don't write them down because it's easier for me when I'm studying matches or instructionals to screenshot things. So I have, because I'm a very visual learner too, to have a visual piece there along with what I'm writing out, what I'm dictating. I mean, I had to get a new phone because I was out of space. I was out of storage space for it. But that that was how I learned. And then that was how when I would teach, like I'd go back and all the studying that I would do as a student to better myself, I would go back and I'd be like, okay, well now if I had to instruct this to somebody, like what are all the details I need to hit on? What are the things that I was missing that I can make sure somebody else doesn't miss now as a student. Sure. So I started getting more opportunities to teach, you know, like at my home gym and Precision and stuff, like they needed certain classes filled and stuff. And because I was enjoying studying and being a student more, I was gravitating more to trying to pass it on to other people to teach. And so, you know, I started to find myself as an instructor, as a teacher. And that wasn't easy too, because not everybody learns the way you do. And I can be very long winded with my instructions sometimes because there's so many points that I want to hit on.
Yeah.
And, but you know, you gotta, it's gotta be conducive to, it's gotta be digestible for people.
Yeah.
You know? It's gotta be conducive to an hour block. And, so there was a lot of growth with that, but I really started to enjoy it. I was like, man, this is fulfilling. Like being able, the stuff that I'm learning, being able to feel like I understand enough or I can pass it along to somebody else in a way that it's going to resonate with them and to see their growth and everything. So I made a lot of progress with that as an instructor. It made me better as a student, as a competitor. And then the opportunities just started to expand from there. You know, I knew John from years of training with Sean. Mm-hmm. And John was always great to me. Like I wasn't a fighter, you know, but I would work with a lot of the fighters doing jiu-jitsu. So he saw that hard work, that work ethic, that mindset, and we developed a relationship. And then when they needed somebody to fill that gap teaching the jiu-jitsu courses, we talked and it was like a perfect fit.
Sure.
And then I got to go over there and teach those guys. And that's a different, you know, area in and of itself. Like now you're going from teaching pure jiu-jitsu practitioners to guys that are, some over there are pure jiu-jitsu practitioners. Some are fighters. Some have like no experience with jiu-jitsu. Some have limited just so that it fills the gap in their MMA. Mm-hmm. So I get to work with people from all walks of life there, different, you know, cultures, skill levels and everything. It's been awesome. And then obviously the EF combatives is a whole nother.
Yeah. We'll get there. Do you feel like, your biggest competition win, do you feel like that's just as sweet or not as sweet or sweeter, which I doubt, than seeing the impact that you have as an instructor and a teacher?
They're definitely like, they've got to go hand in hand. Yeah. I think that's a great point. Like the feeling that I get from like every day being like when I look forward to teaching a class and like the preparation and just being like knowing that like I'm going in there to take the experience that I have, the progress that I have, and like these people trust me enough to learn from me, for me to pass it along.
Yep.
Like it's it pumps me up. You know what I mean? Okay. As much to compete. Like I just read every class. Like I'm like, this is awesome. This opportunity. I don't take it for granted, you know? Mm-hmm. So yeah, just like competition wins. I don't take for granted, you know, no matter how long I compete or how good I am down the line. Like I treat every like win. Like this is, you know, I'm blessed to be here and to have these opportunities to succeed. And same with teaching. Like I teach a class and I'm like, that was awesome. Like I'm so grateful that I get to be in this position to do this, to improve these people. So yeah, they go hand in hand.
You're literally making better humans, man. You know what I mean? And I'm glad you brought up the trust because it's a big part of it, right? Because they need to trust you, but you're literally making better humans. When you win at competition, you're inspiring them.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? They know your story. You know, they know the hard work that you put in. You're inspiring them that they can do the same. And then when you're instructing, you're hands on with them, like literally giving them the tools to do the same.
And I hear that from a lot of cops that I'll train. They'll see me competing, and like obviously jiu-jitsu and law enforcement is growing, but it's, you know, still in its infancy for the most part. Like, obviously with EF combatives, it's what we're trying to change, that culture, so that it's like the standard instead of like,
it's crazy. I trained with a Philly cop at Semper Fi, and he said up until the time he was training that cops in Philly weren't even allowed to train jiu-jitsu. It was literally, they were like, if you got caught, you would be like,
isn't that crazy?
It's wild.
It's mind-blowing. But it's because you get these antiquated, you know, rules and practices, and people don't want to change them.
It goes with anything in society nowadays. It's fucking ass backwards.
It is, really. And unfortunately, a lot of times it takes like something traumatic to change that thought process.
Yes.
And unfortunately, in law enforcement, it has to be like people getting hurt. Yep. And realizing that there's a better way to do
it. How many videos do we need to see online of an out-of-shape cop getting manhandled by a
criminal?
I was saying Martinez, like most of my teammates are Philly cops.
Yeah,
most
which is them. Awesome. Which like, is that's which so is cool amazing. To see, and I give those guys a lot of credit because I know a lot of them, like, they're not like me where I grew up doing it. It was already ingrained in my in my routine.
How many times have you used it in your... in here?
Well, luckily, because I work in an affluent area, not as much as I need to, but I've taught a lot of guys who like work in less desirable areas, and we'll get responses from them. Like sometimes like the day or week after we teach a course, we'll have guys message us and be like, we used all the techniques you guys showed and it like, it helped, it saved our life.
So give the community, give the Eagles watching, listening, just an idea of what EF combatives is.
Yeah.
Cause we glossed over that. I just want to make sure.
So I was competing at that Fight to Win promotion at the time. And there was another, jiu-jitsu black belt and law enforcement officer named Jay Wadsworth from the New York area who was on the same cart. And he approached me, we were talking, we had some familiarity with each other, but we'd never really like met and chopped it up.
Sure.
And he was like, hey man, I'm starting this company with another guy. And we're going to be teaching, you know, combatives, jiu-jitsu-based combatives across the country, ideally to law enforcement agencies. Like, would you want to be an instructor, you know? And I was like, fuck yeah. And at the time, I was like, who knows if this will come to fruition or not.
Were you already teaching at your home school?
No. Well, I wasn't teaching combatives to police. Like, I was teaching jiu-jitsu.
Jiu-jitsu, I meant.
Yeah. But I wasn't teaching, like, I'd never taught, you know, police combatives, really, you know? And, but I was like, yeah, like, if I get the opportunity, I'd love to. And, you know, fast forward, like him and the other owner, Adam, who's a retired law enforcement officer, but, you know, jiu-jitsu practitioner too. And he's kind of the business end of it. Whereas Jay developed the actual curriculum. The company's taken off. Like, I mean, it looks like they've been around for like 10 years and they've only been around for like two. It's like you guys, like their growth has been like astronomical because of the hard work they put in and because of the passion they have for it. And so we teach combatives courses across the country, like basically week long, you know, 4 or 5 day courses.
I didn't realize it was that long.
It's like we're there like, you know, 8 to 4 or 7 to 3 kind of thing every day from like Monday through Friday, teaching these guys the whole curriculum so that they can go back and instruct people. So it's usually like one or two representatives from a department. It's not like a whole department comes. It's like they send, you know, we'll get like 10, 15, 20 different agencies that'll send one or two guys. And they learn the curriculum and then they go back and instruct it. And they get access to like an app, like a very comprehensive user app that allows them to like revisit the techniques anytime that they need to.
Sure.
To study them and to continue to teach it to their agencies. Mm-hmm. You know, so we're making them instructors. It's just been, it's been unbelievable because it's, again, it's given me an opportunity to continue improving myself as an instructor, to touch upon and to combine the two most important aspects of my life, right? My passion in jiu-jitsu and my profession in law enforcement.
Awesome. Yep.
So it's a great program. They have a great message and company, and they're doing a really good job I'm, you know, honored and glad to be a part of it. And, you know, it's such a good tool and asset for anybody in law enforcement to try to utilize. So if people aren't exposed to it, you know, we work really well hand in hand with people to get their agencies involved. So like people mm-hmm. that feel like they're interested, but maybe their agencies aren't, like, we'll do the work to get them involved and on board. So, you know, any cops that are out there that are looking to bring this to their agency, like, I can't recommend it enough. And I know I'm, you know, biased as an instructor, but like, I see and I hear the feedback from people who have taken other combatives courses. Mm-hmm. We get guys that have been defensive tactics instructors for their agencies for years. And they're like, dude, the stuff you guys are showing is like, we're so glad we took it. Like, we didn't know what we were doing. We just, you know, like,
I hear all the same type of stuff from cops. And there's a reason why I waited till later on in the show to bring it up, because I wanted you to tell your whole story and where you came through and everything that you've been through and the work that you've put in, so that they understand and can trust the program.
Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, I'm not just doing it because I work for that company and like, and I'm trying to make them money and make me extra money. Like this was my life was jiu-jitsu. You know, I spent 50% of my life has been training jiu-jitsu, you know?
Yeah.
And so
all where can if there are officers that want to get their agency involved, where can they find EF Combatives? Let's just, so we don't forget.
Yes, we have, we're very active on Instagram. It's, I believe the handle is just EF Combatives.
Okay.
The website is efcombatives.com. And so the Instagram has a lot of behind the scenes looks at, the techniques we show, the courses we do, feedback, all that stuff.
Cool.
Real life utilization. And then the website is where people can visit to find more information for booking the courses, for contacting us, things like that.
Okay.
Yeah. Very cool. Very cool. Those are the two best ways.
Very cool.
Yeah.
All right. So we're doing a good job of covering all the hard work that you do. I mentioned that in the beginning, right? Of the show, all the hard work that you do. Let's touch on the avid reader thing.
Yeah.
For a moment, if you don't mind, love right? It. So you did mention that there was a point in your journey, in your jiu-jitsu journey, where you became more studious, right? You know, we talked about that turning point. Were you reading as much before that turning point, or was that like a?
Okay, yeah, so I was always a book nerd.
Okay,
because like I said, I was not an athlete.
Yeah, growing up.
What's that? Yeah. Okay. I always enjoyed reading. You know, I was always like, I've always been super artsy. Like
same.
Before, same. Yeah. Well, obviously, you guys are both phenomenal creative artists and stuff with doing all your own designs for the company, which is crazy. You know, I mean, not just being involved in the business aspect, but actually like each logo and project is like. Part of your own your mind, you're generated from your minds and your hard work.
Yep.
And I was like that too. I could always draw really well. Okay. I played a couple instruments.
And you don't like when you not to judge a book by its cover.
Right. I look like a meathead. I look like a fucking. I look like I go home and if I'm not trained jiu-jitsu, I'm just like banging like a rock against.
Yeah. Chicken and rice.
Yeah. But no, it was
what
like.
What instruments did you play?
Guitar and piano.
Oh wow.
Yeah, I played guitar for years, and then like I learned how to play guitar. Like I legitimately play guitar, and I kind of taught myself piano. Like I wasn't good. Wasn't good at piano, but I just kind of like dabbled with it and everything because I was really into music. And that was probably like right before I got into jiu-jitsu and stuff. So I was like, just straight music and book nerd, basically. Yeah.
I know that life.
And then I developed like the actual physicality and stuff.
But a lot of people I've met through jiu-jitsu, they like to read. They like chess. They they like those mind,
right?
Mind.
Yeah, they like the stimulation from it and the challenge. Yeah, but I always like I read a lot, and I was always probably the only change in my reading was like I always liked like fiction and, and like fantasy and stuff because I could get immersed in it. It was easy to just hammer it out and read, you know. So like, for instance, like you read like the Game of Thrones books or something it's just like that shit's so exciting, and you can get immersed in it and just power through it.
Was just talking to someone about this. Yesterday, but the Hunger Games, the books, those were like they literally that's the book that comes to mind immediately. It's literally like completely like captivated me.
And there's a lot of like people don't realize there's a lot of cool series like that they're out there that exist that don't get enough credit because like they haven't become shows yet. But a lot of times, like you look at those books, like Game of Thrones books, like that, I don't know the exact date, but like they were probably like he probably wrote the first book in like I would think like maybe the late 90s or something. Yeah. Like they've been around for a long time. Like same with like the Lord of Rings book, shit like that.
I just bought that series. Like I literally just bought it and I haven't read it yet, but it's on my shelf.
Yeah. So there's a lot of series that I've like read and I'm like, dude, I hope they make a show out of this. It'd be so badass and bring so much attention to it for
people. The Lord of the Rings movies were sick.
Unreal.
Yeah.
You know? It's a shame that like
you don't like them.
I've never seen them.
Oh, okay. Ooh. Oh, well, that's
Game of Thrones, but I didn't see it.
Continuous podcast, it's true. Yeah, and I, yeah. You can just take a backseat
on fantasy.
Yeah, I'll put Ernest. In yeah.
What? And this is completely off topic, but it's on topic, but we're getting away from the show. But Harry Potter, did you love Harry Potter? As
yeah, well? I read the books and everything. Same, it was great. Right. Yeah, I thought it was really cool. Yeah, I thought
you
they
ever
did
read Harry Potter?
Yeah, we talked about this. I think probably one of the first times you came by HQ, it was just me and you.
Yeah,
and we talked about this. Like, I don't read fiction.
Yeah,
in your life though? Like, I got into reading for Harry Potter was probably like the first. Like,
it shouldn't surprise you though. You know how like serious I am.
But I mean, I imagine that.
Yeah, this guy could literally tell you like what Da Vinci ate for breakfast.
Exactly. Kind of I imagine that Joey at 12 years old maybe actually had some fun in him.
No, you know what I was doing? It's when I was that young, like 10, 11, I was reading about like Mickey Mantle, Babe Ruth. Like I was reading like sports biographies, autobiographies. Yeah. Like I was reading that type of stuff.
Well, and this might like, you might understand this probably like Drew too, is like, I look at both your bookshelves, obviously they're filled with like, you know, some of the most like intellectually stimulating, you know, books for progress and growth and stuff like that. But I feel like, and maybe Drew would understand this more, is like, you gotta be in the right mindset to read a lot of those. So for me, I'm always between like two books because if I'm going to bed or something and my brain's not ready to retain the information from like an intellectually stimulating or like thought-provoking growth book like that, I'll hammer out some fantasy novel that I'm in the middle of or a fiction book.
Yep.
And then like during the day or whatever, if I'm sitting down having a coffee or whatever, like that's when I'll try to read some of that to try to get
that's
some
actually so gotcha. Funny you said that because I just was talking to my wife about this last night because Danny from Movement gifted me like six Malcolm Gladwell books. And the season of life I'm in right now, like I was halfway through it and I was like, you know what, I'm gonna pick up a different book midway just because I want to read this other book about business.
Yeah,
like so they're sitting next to each other on my coffee table, just it's like my thought-provoking like just because book and the business book that I'm trying to like gain knowledge from.
I do feel you there. I do like there are some nights I read before I go to bed, kind of like puts me to sleep, you know, it's slumber time for me, you know, calms my mind, quiets everything. And there are some days where I pick up the business book that I'm reading and I'm like, I had a hell of a day from a business standpoint and I just can't. So I've read like Tribe of Millionaires. I don't know if you've ever read that. So there, it's kind of the same as 12 Pillars.
Tim Ferriss though.
Where there's
Tribe of Mentors?
No, there's Tribe of Millionaires. So it's a fictional story with personal development wrapped into it.
Yeah, those
it's
are
similar to 12 Pillars.
Yeah,
or like a
so it's still
Ayn Rand type stuff.
Yeah, like, or something like that. So it's still self improvement or personal growth oriented, but there's a fictional story wrapped around it.
I like that a lot,
which like helps my brain at those times it's when like, I'm in overwhelm.
Yeah, it's like historical fiction for me. I read a lot of Stephen Pressfield. Who's great because it's like I learned so much about history, but it's engrossing because it's like a little bit, there's a little bit of a you know fictional twist on it because he's not just hammering you with facts about you know ancient Greece and Macedonia and stuff like that. He's like, hey, here's this individual who's gonna be the focal point of the story and it's gonna be their process and their journey, but like I'm gonna all the details of places and people are completely factual accurate, so you're learning a ton too.
I think you just inspired me. I think I'm gonna take up Game of Thrones, the Lord of the Rings books. I just haven't read it.
Dude, I got a series now that I know you're like a fantasy nerd too. I got a series for another series.
Should I put it in front of Lord of the Rings or should I?
I think you could finish it quicker. Yeah, so like because Lord of the Rings is like a it's an endeavor.
Because I feel like people that are listening are going to be like, what is the book he's on?
Where I was going with it is, with this avid reader thing, wanted to understand how you became such an avid reader, which I think we can check the box on that. So recommend to the community, maybe your favorite, I guess, fantasy.
Fiction. Yeah.
And in your favorite fiction and favorite nonfiction.
Okay, yeah.
One book each or two if you want.
Yeah, so the one I was going to recommend to you, this series is called the Red Rising Trilogy. So the first book is called Red Rising and then like, but it's basically just referred to as the Red Rising Trilogy. And it's really cool. It's like, it's set in like a, you know, future fictional society in which like groups of people, classes of people are organized by like different colors, so, like gold, silver, things like that. And it's basically like, you know, a hierarchy with gold being like the most like successful, prominent people like that. And then all the way down to red. So red is basically like this, like the lowest class of slaves, and they're like they're on Mars and they're their job, the red society, is like terraforming the earth to make it habitable for the rest of society. So they're kind of like indoctrinated into thinking that they have this like this requirement and this goal. That's why they have to work so hard, be like slaves to the rest of society, because they're doing, you know, something to improve it, to better it. Mm-hmm. And it's really like a lie that they've been told. Like the planet's already habitable. It's being like, it's habited by these more successful, prominent colors and stuff.
Hence the red rising.
Yeah. And so they're basically like slaves. So they come up, there's like this guerrilla faction from the red society that comes up with this plan to take one of their individuals and like infiltrate the gold society, like make them like, and break, basically bring it down from the inside. But then you have all this, like, the story is really cool because it's, you know, since it's set in the future, you have all these different like forms of technology and combatives and stuff like that.
Nice.
But then you also have like the personal individual growth that of that person, like they have an obligation to their family and society to try to rid them of like the shackles that they've been accustomed to. But now he's also developing these relationships with the other, you know, the golds, the other forms of society, seeing the people that are in his place at his age, like why they're led to like think and believe the way that they are, you know, and he develops relationships with them where he doesn't have like the same ill will toward them because he can see why they're taught to think this way.
Yep.
And then like, then there's that conflict, that dichotomy between those two thought processes, and it's really cool.
I think it turned me to the fiction side.
I'm surprised you have not read any fiction.
Here and there.
Like, what one?
To be honest, I couldn't even name one off the top. Like, to be honest, dude, I couldn't even name one.
Yeah,
I haven't done lately, but I love getting lost because they're the page turner. I mean, there are some books that'll get you.
Yeah, you read Dune, like, because now that's a good one too.
Yeah,
they just made the second movie for that, and it got like rave reviews, and that's another really cool one.
Okay. So, how about on the nonfiction side? Any recommendation?
Yeah, I would say, I don't know if it like, I guess counts, but like, I really like that one that I gave you, the Stephen Pressfield one of A Man at Arms, and like a lot of Pressfield in general. I know it's like, it's not quite nonfiction; it's like historical fiction to an extent.
Mm-hmm.
But I think his stuff is really like, as a competitor, as an athlete, like he does a really good job of like of blending those lessons and that information from ancient history into like a form where it makes you feel like motivated to be like, to improve yourself, to better yourself. Cause he uses like Alexander the Great, like all these historical figures who are like, who their journeys are just like, just straight hard work. And like, they're these, you know, pillars of motivation for their people and stuff like that. And so I always enjoy reading those cause I see like, I learn a lot about that, you know, the mindset back then from that time and place.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the ancient Greece, the Spartans and stuff like that. You're learning so much about their society, their culture, but you're also just seeing these people who like all they know is hard work. You know what I mean? Like there's no, like it wasn't just like
no other option.
Yeah. There was no other option. Zero it was option. Like, if you didn't work hard, if you weren't like a soldier or Spartan, if you weren't like the good of bettering your society and yourself, like you were dead, you know? And so I always like reading books like that. Cause it's, I'll sometimes read them before I compete, like the week before I compete, like that's where I'll switch off. Cause I'll be like, man, like I'm bitching about this competition, losing. And here are these guys that were like, you know, they're going out on these, you know, battlefields with the sake of their entire civilization, you know, on the line. And it's just like, it helps puts things in perspective.
Yeah.
So I really enjoy reading ones like that.
Nice.
Yeah.
All right. Let's tie it up with some more perspective, something to put some things into perspective lately for you.
So
almost, we're fortunate to have you here with us today on the show because not so long ago, very recent history. We were talking about ancient history, but this is very recent history.
Yeah.
You had quite a scare.
Yeah.
And you had quite a scare.
I know.
And I'm interested, you don't have to dive into all the nitty gritty of it, but I'm interested in everything, all of the hard work that you've done over the years, earning your black belt, all of the reading that you've done, all of the hard work you've done to overcome limiting beliefs when it comes to you being an instructor and things like that. How did all of those things play into you straight up surviving what you just went through?
Yeah. So obviously to shed some light on the situation in general, it was around November, mid-November last year, I had to go to the ER for this pain, this issue that I was experiencing. And long story short, it wound up being like a rare bacterial infection in my chest cavity. And so not related to bacteria from jiu-jitsu, from training at all. I'm a very clean individual when it comes to that. But it was, the process for how this particular bacteria ended up there was very rare, unexpected, probably unavoidable to an extent. And I wound up being hospitalized for 16 days where, fluid that was accumulating in my chest cavity from that bacteria had to be removed. And unfortunately, the severity of the infection, things like that, it was not able to be removed from like traditional measures of just like the gradual process of different forms of draining that they would do. Eventually, they had to do an actual, thoracic surgery, cut open my side, go in and clean all that stuff out. So it was,
intense.
I think they said, it's supposed to be like one of the top five, like, or so most like painful surgeries. Like it's pretty brutal, I mean, they're cutting open the entirety of your side.
We've seen the scar.
Yeah.
This isn't like a minimally invasive.
No, it's not outpatient.
You look like you had like a foot long scar on your.
Yeah.
On your side.
I need some cooler stories for it. Like, shark attacks or mafia things like that. But it's legit. And, it's part of me now. It's a brand, it's a reminder, but it was basically like, I had to be in the hospital, like just in constant pain every day. Like it was, I don't normally like wax poetic when it comes to like, painful things, but like this shit was brutal, like it was just every day you're just like, you're in agony, you can barely sleep and stuff like that. And, I didn't know, what was going to happen. I didn't think I was going to die, but at the same time, I was like, dude, I don't know what's going to come of this. I really couldn't even think that far ahead. Cause it was just like, all you're thinking of at the time is just like not being in pain. Like that's the only thought in your mind.
There's overwhelming physical pain, but I've got to imagine, and you correct me if I'm wrong, but I've got to imagine that there's also during all that overwhelming physical pain, there's mental pain as well because you're out of your ritual.
Yeah. And I was supposed to compete like,
not just like you're out of it for a little bit because you're in the hospital, like you're completely depleted, right? 100%. You have to build yourself back.
Yeah. And that's the thing. It's crazy. Really, to your point, it puts into perspective like how quickly all the progress and hard work you've made over the years can be wiped out by something like that. I mean, every day we get up, we're going, we're exercising, we're going to the gym, we're going to practice and stuff like that. And like you spend years doing it to get to the point that you're at. And then in 2 weeks being, a little over 2 weeks of being sedentary in the hospital, I mean, I lost like 15 pounds of like muscle. You know what I mean? I could barely, walk, breathe, like my VO2 max, my cardio was all shot. It was like, it's stuff that I spent a decade, plus like building.
I remember why I had texted you because I had asked you to come to that Strong New York event with us. I had texted you and I was like, hey man, and you were like, hey, something's not right.
Sorry, I'm almost dead.
Yeah. You were like, I think that was a little, that could have been.
Yeah.
Before you actually went in, because you had a little bit of a delay in treatment because you got seen and then you weren't sure and then you went back.
Misdiagnosed, right?
And you were kind of like, hey, like something's not right.
Yeah.
I got to go back in type thing. Or I've been in for a day or so. Right, I forget what it was.
Yeah, I wasn't like quite sure of what the severity of the outcome was going to be and everything. But it just helped put things in perspective where at the time, my only goal was just like, I just don't want to be in pain. Like that was goal number one, And then after that, it was like, I didn't know what was going to come of the situation, like what the long-term effects were going to be, but I just in my head I was like, I've done the work to get here, I've worked my ass off for so many years to be like in the position I want to be in physically and mentally and stuff like that, and like so at the end of the day I know if I have to do another 10 years of that to make it back to where I'm at, like
you're
fuck it, I can do it. I'm prepared to do it, like and luckily it wasn't that way. Like it probably took me, that happened middle of November, and I think I was back. I was coaching at Marquez, like with like a midline, an IV line in my arm, like 6 weeks later, you know, I wasn't training. I was just like, I was teaching, but I was like, as soon as I could get back on the mat and do anything to start that process of getting back to where I was taking advantage of it.
I mean, going back to, you know, what I said in the beginning of the show, the work that you do in silence, like, you know, you posted once or twice about what happened and, you know, your journey back, but you weren't on the gram, like, hey, look at my line, I'm coaching.
Yeah,
you were back at it, back building in silence, working hard, like doing exactly what you do.
Yeah, exactly. Cause like, I didn't want to be like all like, woe is me. Because at the end of the day, like, I guess like when you're going through something like that, it's like, you're in a position. If you're in a position to experience loss like that, it means like you've been like blessed or benefited with having been in a position to experience that, right? Like some people, that's all they know, right? They might be born like in constant pain and shit like that. And like,
it gives you perspective too. Yeah. Like, you're like, oh, this was bad, but it wasn't that bad.
Well, right? So for instance, like mine was like really like random and rare and stuff like that. There was somebody else who was in there at the same time that I was with like the same thing, which is really weird. And theirs wasn't like as bad as mine. They got out like before me without having to have the same thoracic surgery. But I think there was like somebody who's like, I don't know if it was, my mom was telling me about it because, you know, she was visiting me every day and stuff like that. And there was either somebody else, like a child that was going through something similar, or like maybe not the same thing, but just something like equally like painful and bad and everything like that. Yeah. And that's like a kid, right? Like here I am, like I'm a grown man going through it, where like I have the mental fortitude, the capacity, the pain tolerance, things like that. And meanwhile, there's like a kid going through the same shit in the hospital. Like that, they don't know any better. They don't know. Yeah. They don't have the tools to deal with that. Like they're just being thrown into the fire. Right. Yeah. And then even for like that parent, right? Like you're a parent, you're seeing your kid go through that shit. It's different. Like obviously it was, I'm sure, taxing on, you know, my mom, even though I'm a grown man, but like imagine if like your 6 year old is going through that. Well, like how do you deal with it?
We almost lost Parker, my son, at like 7 months old from a thing called croup, where it just like it's a viral infection. And he had to be medevaced to CHOP, and we almost lost him. But that I'm actually grateful for that experience, because it made everything, put everything else into perspective. So now any little thing in life just doesn't really seem that big, because I literally almost lost my son before he was even a year old.
Yeah.
So like literally nothing can affect me or my emotions.
Yep. Yeah. Because you've gone to that brink of like, you know, of what would have been the most dramatic loss for you.
And
now
perspective is power, I always say.
Absolutely, man.
Yeah. Yeah. And you're back, man. You're back. You were here.
I feel great.
You were by HQ when you were starting the build back the last time I saw you. But now you're back, baby.
Yeah,
you look like you're in your old form.
I feel phenomenal,
you look good.
Man. You know, everything comes full circle, comes to fruition. I get to sit down and chop it up with you guys. And then, you know, I get to go do my thing, teach, train, compete.
Yep.
So, yeah. And that's what, like, in the grand scheme of things, like, that's why, as brutal as it was, like, those weeks being in the hospital, like, at the end of the day, like, that happened mid-November, end of November, right? And here it is, like, March, April, and it's like it never happened almost, you know? I mean, there's some lingering effects, but like as bad as it was, I would have been worse off if I had like torn an ACL or something, where at least like there's some clarity on what you did, but like that's a lengthy process. Here I am like months later, and I, you know, and obviously every week I feel like more and more like myself, but I've been back training and competing now for, you know, probably like a month or two. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, in the grand scheme of things, as brutal as it was, like really didn't derail me that much, so I'm grateful. Yeah, that's why I'm not all like woe is me about it. Like it sucked, but like people deal with worse, man.
Yeah,
you know,
every day. All right, why don't you tell the community, most of them already know, but why don't you tell the community where they can find you? You already covered EF Combative, so how about where they can find you?
Yeah, so my IG page is Royce Dillon, R-O-Y-C-E-D-Y-L-A-N. My name is Dillon. Some people still call me Royce. I think they think it's my first name.
I think we've met on Instagram before in real life, and I thought your name was Royce
at first. But. I don't correct people either, because, like, you know, for competing, I feel like it's good, because then, like, the Brazilian referees think like I'm Portuguese. Oh, you know, they think my name's Royce, and so like maybe I get a little, you know, some generous calls, some favoritism, you know. So, you know, so I don't correct anybody, but yeah, it's Royce Dillon, and then on Facebook it's just Dillon Royce. So
okay, very cool. Thank you, not just for coming in today, but I'd be remiss if I didn't say thank you for the belief in us over the years, since damn near very the very beginning of Fuel, right?
Thank you. It was probably 2019, 2020?
Yeah, we were just talking about that. Like, I remember Kurt shooting me in one of those earliest sets.
Like,
over
some of our, like, first rash cars.
Yeah, yeah. Dude, it was an honor then, and it's still an honor, yeah.
Thank you, man. You've been with us on this journey since, like, the very beginning, and I appreciate the belief you have in this crazy, crazy idea we have to build the world's largest community of hard workers and restore the dignity of hard work. But thank you very much, man. Thank you.
Thank you, brother.
Thank you. Any other closing thoughts from you?
No.
No?
No, sir.
He's just ready to start reading. His brain's turning. He's on Amazon.
Red Rising right away.
Yeah. Hell yeah, bro.
All right, well, I'll leave the few with a reminder. Always choose hard work over handouts. Always choose effort over entitlement. No one owns you. No one owes you. You're one of the few. Now let's hunt.